Jace, what's going on, brother?
Not a whole lot. Yourself?
How are you?
I'm doing quite well, quite well.
How's college going? You're nearly done now?
Almost done with these prerequisites. I'll be applying to doctoral programs in after the summer. So come fall
Amazing.
time.
That's awesome, brother. That's really cool. Couple of new people. Eric, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Are you new to us?
No, I've been working with Andrew for a couple years now. I just don't always have time for the calls, but I'm trying to fit it in.
Nah, no problem. Good to have you on. Elias, I believe I'm speaking to you Friday.
Oh, hey.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
Newly back.
Newly back. I think the last time I was with you guys was with the team was in 2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, me too.
Jeff, how's things going?
Doing good. Doing good. Thank you.
Good. Good to see you on. Paul, how are we doing?
Perfectly fine.
Good to see you. You're a regular. John, keep driving. Good to see you. So I know we're gonna touch on peptides tonight, particularly around longevity. I'm wondering, has anybody got any experience with peptides, or have they taken any? I know, John, you have for recovery. Anybody else use peptides?
I used some maybe 4 years ago with a
Yeah.
homeopathic doctor. I think it was something 157 and something else. And I had them and they worked. I took them for maybe 3 to 5 months, something like that. And I had I felt really good. My sleep was great. I did notice some improvements and stuff, but I just stopped seeing it, stopped taking it.
Yeah, and as we'll discuss in here, like the effects of a lot of these peptides are relatively transient. So what I mean by that is they'll do their thing, and whatever that may be. So when you say 157, I assume it was something like BP 157, which we'll touch on. And great for recovery, good for brain health, good for injury recovery as well, which is why John's using it. So they'll normally do their job, and once the job is done, you'll tend to see less effects with them ongoing. And you'd normally, for the most part, need a washout period with a lot of these things as well. So, like, I remember I had experience with a peptide called, and all the names I know are not exactly catchy, but 5-amino-1-MQ was one that I had a lot of success with. But again, after about a month, it once it's done its job, it loses that initial effect or that initial buzz of energy that you tend to get from them. Now, today we're touching on specifically for longevity. So it's going to be a handful of peptides that we're going to go through, and we'll kind of give you what like an overall protocol of what that could look like. Now, the protocol that I'm going to give you is going to be relatively big. So I don't expect you guys to use every single one of these. It would cost you like $1,000 a month to run these kind of protocols. So it does end up being very, very expensive. So we'll try and break it down to look at some of the benefits or some of the things that you might need to work on personally. And then you can be a little bit more selective about the things that you do. I'll touch on hormones. I'll say briefly. So with hormones and longevity, it's a little bit messier in the sense that, some research shows they're beneficial, some research shows not so much. So I'm less inclined, I can't prescribe anyway, I'm not a doctor, but I'm less inclined to say to someone, you know what might be good for you? Growth hormone, testosterone. It's a little bit more of a mixed bag in terms of results. But I will mention them. Now, everybody see that in full screen? We good? So, what we're going to touch on. Now, a month ago, some of you might have been on that call where I spoke about longevity, like what are the mechanisms of aging? I think it's important that we run over those just briefly again for the guys that weren't on the call last time. So in geroscience, which is the study of aging, right, they've kind of coined 12 different ways in which we biologically age. And some of them look a little bit abstract or esoteric, and we can't really test them all yet. So some of them, don't get bogged down in every single one of these things, because like when you look at healthy dieting, exercise, appropriate sleep will affect all of these mechanisms. But there's some of them in there, particularly when we talk about the peptides later, that we can actually have effects on. So they are worth noting, or worth knowing at least a little bit about what each one, or at least what a handful of them are. So there is 12 of them. Oh, sorry. Before we get on to that, I'll mention what an actual peptide is. Like, peptides are becoming rampant, what you can see around social media in terms of their effects. And I think they are very effective, but I'd almost want to think of them as like tip of the spear, right? So when you have everything else correct within your life, like your diet's on point, your training's on point, your sleep's on point, your stress management within reason is on point, then peptides can be a really nice addition to get that, 3, 4, 5, 6 extra percent of what you're trying to do. But what I find with a lot of people who are into like quote unquote biohacking, they'll use them more as a mask or a band-aid to put over a certain problem. I don't think that's an effective way to use these. It's also really expensive. And we'll talk about the peptides that have been shown to be effective. Talk about if there is a perfect protocol, probably not. And what do we do about hormones? Yeah, just the lady who put up the title for this, I was like, I didn't ask you to put hormones in, because it's something I'm definitely not a hormonal expert. I know the mechanisms of hormones. I know what they do, but in terms of replacement, is not something I have the utmost of experience with. Also, because I can't prescribe. Now, looking at, don't, like I said, don't get too bogged down in this. We'll run through it quickly so that at least you can guys can have a general idea of what things actually affect us as we age, and the things that accelerate our aging. Like you can see from the top of the blue, we'll go through these quick. DNA, right? So damage to DNA. So the DNA material that we're born with, that gets damaged as we age. And it also gets affected by several different mechanisms around our environment. So either the food that we put in us, the environment or pollution that we're exposed to, the stress that we're put under, all those things will affect your genomic, or will increase genomic instability. Telomere attrition. This is an interesting one. And the reason why I'm going to emphasize this a little bit more is we're going to talk about a peptide that's been shown to have benefits around telomere length. Some of you might have heard of telomeres, right? And it's become relatively popular because they have found that people telomeres sit at the end of your chromosomes. And you can think of them as like the plastic that sits on top of your shoelace. And every time we replicate cells, so every time we have turnover of cells, our telomeres become shorter and shorter. And they noticed that there was an association between this and early death, right? Now, that doesn't mean that. So at one stage, we thought telomere length was the only reason that we aged and died. Not the only one, but one of the major ones. And as you can see, it's part of the 12, but it is not the only thing that will affect how quickly we age or how quickly we die. But telomeres are important, and they can be a measurement of aging. Epigenetics is important. So you can see epigenetic alterations. These names sound fancy, but think of, we know what genetics are. I don't even understand DNA particularly well, but we know like DNA is kind of what we're born with. Epigenetics is, epi just means on top of your genetics. So think of it as genetics plus environment. So it's how we express our genes. I like the phrase that's been used before: genes load the gun, environment pulls the trigger. So it's the combination of how we're born and then what we're exposed to. Now, we can test for epigenetics, and we ran them for a little while with muscle intelligence, and it was really interesting to see people's epigenetic expression. However, the science just isn't quite there yet to influence it in the way that we would have wanted to. So, like, you're finding that people are showing up with these markers of epigenetic expression, but there was no, because it's all computer learning now, right? So they are finding these measurements of epigenetic expression, and it's like, oh, this client needs to worry about this problem. But there was very little research on that problem. So it was very hard for us to actually influence, but it's important to notice. We won't worry about these last two. As you move down through the green, mitochondrial function is something that you guys can not measure in yourself, but something that you guys can see. So one of the biggest predictors of aging or longevity is our VO2 max. It's our ability to be able to produce energy in the presence of oxygen. Okay. And the mitochondria, taking you back to high school biology, is that organelle within every cell, except for red blood cells, before anyone calls me on it. That produces energy, so produces ATP. And I don't know if Ben coined this saying. It might have been Chris Masterjohn who said this, but energy dictates everything. So our ability to be able to produce energy will is a massive determinant on our overall health. So if you notice in yourselves, guys, that you have like these spats of fatigue throughout the day, if you notice that you struggle to, and this is something that you may not notice, but you'll know the association when I mention it, that you struggle to go from carbohydrate metabolism to fat metabolism. So if you go a long time without eating, you either get really fatigued or you get shaky and lightheaded and symptoms of like low blood sugar. That's metabolic flexibility. It's really not fancy, but does play a really big role in our overall health. And then cellular senescence is an interesting one. Cellular senescence is when our cells, when they become dysfunctional, should be removed out of circulation through something called autophagy. So, autophagy eating self. So we should be able to eat these cells up. Our immune system should be able to gobble them up and take them out of circulation. However, as we age, we end up with these senescent cells. So they become like zombie cells. We can't take them out of circulation anymore. And eventually they go through something that's called necrosis. So instead of programmed death or us removing them as they should, they kind of spill their innards everywhere and affect all the cells around them. It's one of the mechanisms, one of the many mechanisms involved in stuff like cancer. Okay, now the last couple that we'll touch on. Some of you guys might have heard of stem cells. Stem cells are these magical thing, are these magical cells that can differentiate and give cells to any part of the body, right? So it's like, oh, we need more bone, we need more pancreatic cells, we need more muscle tissue, whatever it looks like. And as we age, those stem cells tend to get exhausted or we lose them. So they don't do this differentiation anymore. So we can't replicate effectively. And then the last two that we'll see regularly is chronic inflammation and dysbiosis. Dysbiosis, just think of it as an imbalance in the bacteria within your gut. And then chronic inflammation is just systemic or low-grade immune response around the body. We hear this word inflammation a lot, but always associated with the immune system. The immune system is responding to something within the body, like an infection or damaged tissue, or autoimmunity in certain circumstances. And this causes this low-grade inflammation throughout the body. And the three that we tend to see most commonly, also because we don't test for a lot of this, or you can't, is mitochondrial dysfunction, chronic inflammation, dysbiosis, and nutrient sensing to a certain extent as well. But like these are the main things that we'll see. So as we go through these peptides, understand that they will play into somewhere on this wheel. All right. So knowing what they do can be important. I know it sounds a little bit, I know it sounds like a little bit much to look at all this, but it's important to recognize that these are the reasons why we age. Now, there's only a couple of people here that were on the call last time. What can you guys separate these two terms? What's the difference between health span and lifespan? You can put it, oh, sorry, I should say, you can put it in the chat. So you guys tell me, what's the difference between lifespan and health span?
I wasn't on the call, but it makes me think of lifespan, your total life from birth to death, and health span being what that period of your life cycle that you're actually healthy, mobile, able to do things.
Yeah. So you can look at, as Jason mentioned there, you can look at it in that way. It's actually a cool way to look at it, but I like to think of it as like lifespan is just chronologically. So it's how many years you're actually on this planet. And then, like was mentioned, health span is how many of those are actually spent in functional capacity. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to live to 110 sick. I'd rather live till 80 healthy, and die in a deadlift. Probably my dream way to go. And then, but you look at what you see in a lot of the population now, and it's a saying that I've heard a few times, which is grim, but I kind of like. We live till we're 50, then we die till we're 80. We end up in polypharmacy. We end up not being able to fulfill whatever our physical needs are, and that's how we tend to peter out towards our later years. So when I discuss in this, I'm normally talking about health span. I'm not talking about just extending the amount of years we're on this planet, and I'll refer back to that every once in a while. So let's get back to it. Yeah, so another thing I always want to touch on, right? Geroscience, and I said this last time, geroscience fucking sucks, man. Like, the research is done on C. elegans, monkeys, rats, and it's got its massive amounts of limitations. And the main reason it has limitations is because no one's going to fund that study. No one's going to take babies from when they're born to when they die and put in one intervention to see what happens. So we do have to extrapolate a lot of this stuff out of it and think, right, it's playing on these mechanisms. Maybe it'll extend our health span. But in some of this research is quite interesting because when we look at peptides, most of the research is still in animals. So it's important to emphasize that. Like, even though, like John, for example, he's running BPC-157 for a shoulder injury. And there's some good research out there in human studies for BPC's effects, but it's still really minimal. The reason why I'm normally comfortable saying to people, like, you can try these peptides, at least the ones that I'm going to mention today, is the safety profile is so good. So even if you drop a bunch of money on it, at least I can be confident in thinking, right, I'm not hurting this person. So it's worth knowing most of this stuff is animal studies. There is some human trials on them as well. And whether you want to believe it, I tend to, because actually Russian studies tend to be really good. A lot of these studies come out of Russia. So a lot of the original peptide research came out of Russia. And that's why it didn't hit the West for a long time. So take that as you will. Now, I did mention the lifestyle factors that play into longevity. I'm going to bring you back to this one quick. We did this, we spoke about this last time as well. But like, unless you have all this kind of stuff under control, be a little bit wary about jumping down the peptide route. You know, if you're taking Epitalon, but you're still smoking 20 cigarettes, we got an issue there. And we look at polypharmacy as well as a major predictor of death as well. So if you're on multiple medications, it can be a problem. And we touched on it last time, purpose. Sense of purpose plays a major role in how long we live. Those who are lonely will die quicker than those who smoke and those who drink alcohol. So don't ignore loneliness as a major predictor. Now, what you actually came for. A peptide is just a short chain of amino acids. This is why I remember when I first started with muscle intelligence, Ben being like, look, these peptides are going to be a big deal. And I remember just thinking, what? A strand of amino acids? But as I started to look into the research, and obviously you can see now with the GLP-1 agonists for fat loss that they have really profound effects in the right circumstances. But all these are like our biological or cellular messengers. So they just, whatever their strand of amino acids are, they'll indicate a certain tissue, a cell within the body that it needs to do something. And so if you think about BPC-157, which is the real famous one, it basically knocks out the cell of the tissue, and it's like, we need reparation here, reparation. We need to repair here. So like it'll increase angiogenesis, bring blood flow to that area, and bring a lot of healing compounds to make sure it can repair. But it does a lot of the things you can see, like hormone signaling, immune responses, tissue repair, metabolism. But these are very transient effects. This is why they don't tend to have the same side effect profile that stuff like hormones might, right? There's obviously skepticism around testosterone use, whether you believe it or not is fine, but those chronic uses of hormones can cause issues. Whereas when we look at these peptides, they're in and out of the system extremely quickly, and they don't seem to have the same negative effects. And if any of these do, I obviously will mention it. But which ones have been really positive in terms of their scientific effects on longevity? Epitalon is a big one that keeps coming up over and over again. This came out of research in Russia by a doctor called Dr. Cavinson. He is a Yank, I'm sure. Am I allowed to use the word Yank? He's an American for sure. But he emigrated out to Russia to do a lot of this research. And Epitalon has activates something, as you can see there, called telomerase. Now, we spoke about telomeres, those things that stick on the top of your chromosomes, which can predict aging. These increase activity of telomerase, which is the enzyme that repairs it, right? So it also enhances immune function, boosts DNA repair. You can see some of the stuff there, where like mice treated with Epitalon lived 20 to 42% longer. Although my study, take from that what you will. But some of the human trials on this, again, were done out of Russia, but they even did it in like macular degeneration. So old people who began to lose their sight, and they used high dose Epitalon with those people to dramatically positive effects. And you can also see there was human trials in Russia where they took elderly-ish like population. So they weren't like, they weren't in their 70s and 80s. They were like 50s, early 50s to 60s. And they followed them for 10 to 15 years. One group took Epitalon, the other group didn't. And when they followed them for that time, there was a hell of a lot less deaths in the Epitalon group. So this is one of those what you look at, like real true longevity peptides, that seems to have some really positive longevity effects. So an interesting one. Doesn't need to be taken for a long period of time. I'll give you kind of dosaging protocols that you can use for these. Next. This is my personal favorite peptide, right? Only because it's so well studied in humans, comparably to a lot of the other ones. So GHKCU is a copper peptide. You're starting to find it in a lot of skin products because it increases collagen production. There's like cool studies out there showing it reduced the depth of wrinkles around the nose by upwards of 60% in 70-year-old women, which is really fucking dramatic. Like you can't boast that with any other skincare. So why it's not everywhere yet, I don't know. It's expensive to apply as cream. Really cheap to inject though. But it also helps with tissue repair. So like you see a lot of products now that use it for leaky gut or intestinal permeability. So like you can also use it topically on the head for hair regrowth. It's been shown to be really effective at that because it'll increase angiogenesis in those areas. It lowers its antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, man. It does so much good stuff. It also helps repair DNA. So we spoke about repair, DNA damage is one of those mechanisms of aging and inflammation. So it does both of those things. And like Ben will mention, this is one of the drugs or one of the peptides that can be used safely ongoing. And it's pretty cheap. Injectably, it's pretty cheap. Orally or topically, not so much. It tends to get a little bit more expensive. But GHK, it's got the coolest color, man, because it's got copper in it. You'll see like it comes as like fluorescent blue in a powder form. But it has really positive effects. Really painful to inject though. I have tried it. So now we get into stuff that's based around the mitochondria. This is one of my favorite topics when it comes to just overall health. and ways that we can increase longevity. Because, like I said, energy dictates everything. And there's loads of peptides out there that have effects on the mitochondria. So you'll see MOTC, SS31 is a really positive one as well. I mentioned the tablets earlier, but now I really am losing it and I can't remember what it was called. But there's other ones like that play on NAD recycling. And these all seem to have a place in a longevity protocol because if we can affect mitochondrial function in a positive way and produce more energy, you'll feel better. But when you look at, like, I mean, even if you think about that psychologically, the more energy that we produce and the better that we feel, the more inclined we are to make better choices, whether that's training choices, whether that's eating choices. So I think some of these can have a lot of really cool effects. Again, MOTC can be painful to inject. I haven't actually used this one, but some of these drugs, like, you'll see in some people are miraculous and other people have very little effect. So I remember. Yeah, I remember saying to Gav, our head coach, is like, oh, he's like, oh, I want to try something for mitochondrial function. I was like, well, MOTC seems to have the best research. And he took it and he literally said he noticed absolutely no difference. Maybe because he already had good mitochondrial function. Maybe this is just needed for those who don't. Also can be positive for weight loss, MOTC. Now, this is one you guys probably know, have heard. Or have interest in. BPC is really, really good at, oops, sorry, with injury repair. In some cases, almost miraculous. So it's also been shown to be really effective against like leaky gut as well, because it's actually BPC was found in the gut initially. It's where they isolated it. And you can see like in studies and studies, like, I mean, even showing its effects on kidney and liver health. So like there was one really random case study that I found on BPC 157 where there was a man, 72, who was needing dialysis 6 times a week for his kidney dysfunction. And they gave him high dose BPC and he managed to drop that dialysis down to one, which at 72 is dramatic, right? So not just for injury repair, but also it seems to have a wide-ranging effect. Now, there is a theory because when you see something like you can see at the top there, like angiogenesis or the increase or the increasing of blood flow to a certain area, angiogenesis occurs also in cancer. So there is this kind of abstract worry that if there's cancer already there, BPC may be a problem. There's no research on that, but it's worth keeping in mind. And this is when you're getting into some of the more fancy ones, right? So pinealon are one of these like bioregulators like that were made out of Russia, really small peptide. I think it's like they normally like 3 and 4 peptides long, but they're very specific to certain parts of the body. So you can get a bioregulator for the kidneys, a bioregulator for the prostate, bioregulator for the liver, the brain, the spleen, whatever you want. You can get them for the testes. They seem to be effective at targeting specific organs. But pinealon is activated like pineal gland function. So it's particularly effective for the brain, for sleep, for cognitive function. And this has human studies on it. So it improved cognitive function in aging individuals and those with neurodegenerative disease. So those at end stage neurodegeneration, it had positive effect on memory recall and their ability to be able to write effectively again. I mean, that's huge. Now, will it work on every single person who's at end stage neurodegeneration? Probably not. But you can see here, like in terms of like improving mood and stress resiliency, DNA repair, oxidative stress, neuroinflammation, neuroplasticity, and memory. So even for us now, these things seem to have effects. So this can also be taken orally, which is much nicer if you guys are afraid of needles, right? So pinealon is generally taken orally. And then the last major one that I'm going to run through with you guys is thymosin alpha 1. Amazing, amazing research on its effects on the immune system. So regulates immune Balance, I think, is probably the best way to put this. So, in terms of if you have suppressed immune system, it tends to bring your immune system up. If you have a heightened immune system, it tends to relax it. Now, I know there's a mention there of autoimmunity. I don't know if I'd be comfortable giving to this to someone with an autoimmune disease because the research on it isn't it's not vast. It's probably the best way to put it, but it's worth noting. And you can see like FDA approved in some countries for hepatitis B, C, and immune deficiencies. So there's like work used here around like stuff like HIV, survival rights for survival rates in sepsis, and used in cancer immunotherapy. Like, I mean, that's pretty significant in terms of its effects. I've given thymus and alpha one to a few clients who tend to be get sick around certain periods of the year. And again, like with peptides, dramatic effects with some, no effects with others. That's the thing, it can be kind of hard to predict. Now, the next one that I wanted to touch on, and I'll get you guys involved a little bit more in this one. You guys obviously know like a lot of the GLP-1 agonists, right? Like Ozempic, tirzepatide, the real famous ones. Would you think, knowing what you've heard or whatever you think about those, do you think they have any benefits for longevity? Do you think they would? Take out the fat loss side of things. So obviously they reduce body weight in people, which is great. So we'll lose a lot of body fat. But do we think they might have mechanisms outside of that? Don't be afraid to answer. I don't know what that means, John. Good attempt, though. Keep driving. Don't worry about pressing it. They seem to have some really, really positive effects on longevity. Now, there's a lot of side effects that come with GLP-1 agonists, like we see. And I didn't put it on here. I should have. There's over 350 fat loss drugs now currently going through either stage one, stage two, or stage three testing. This stuff is getting wild in terms of the fat loss drugs that are going to be available in the next 5 to 10 years. So maybe they'll mitigate the side effects that tend to come with these. Like you see pancreatitis in a lot of people. In about 1%, you'll get pancreatitis, gallstones, or gastroparesis. And they're no joke in terms of side effects. Like they're significant. But if I know, because like it's there's quite a weird split in terms of how people feel about those drugs. People are like, oh, they're terrible, they'll kill you. Other people talking about how miraculous they are. And again, it generally comes somewhere in the middle with a lot of this stuff that you see online. But like in terms of improving insulin sensitivity, lowering inflammation, mitochondrial function, lowers blood pressure and arterial stiffness, and lowers like re reduces risk of neurodegeneration. And that seems to be outside of the fat loss effects. So I think in the next 5 years, we'll probably have a place for some sort of GLP-1 agonist in a longevity protocol. At low dose, so you're never going to use the hyper the really really high dosages that they need to use in people with type 2 diabetes or people with obesity, but there may be a place for a low dose with some of these drugs. I think there probably will be. But that's not me telling you that you should start to use these drugs. I just want to be very clear. You need to speak to a doctor for that. Now, so I'm going to finally give you the world's best longevity protocol. Do not do all of those at once. Cost you an absolute fortune. But you can like when we spoke about the longevity supplements last time, and there's loads of them out there, and you're never going to really know if they're having the positive effect that you think they might be. But rotating through some of these can be really, really beneficial, right? So depending on what you're trying to do, if you're trying to heal injury, BPC, you're trying to work on mitochondrial function, MOTC, you want increased sleep efficacy, like epitalon and pinealon, immune function, thymus and alpha, skin care, GHK. Like, so you can rotate through these and use them effectively without having to go all out. And like the dosages there obviously can vary. So like with like acute injury with BPC, you can go really high initially and start to titrate that down. But BPC can be really, really effective. So depending on what your problem is, will depend on what you try on what kind of dosages or peptides you decide to use. I'm going to go through this relatively quickly, okay? So what about hormones? You guys, has anybody ever heard of the growth hormone secretagogues? So like you always hear like tesamorelin and ipramorelin, CJC. There are all these peptides that will sporadically or pulsatively increase growth hormone in us. So they're good for fat loss, they're good for brain function, they're good for liver health generally with growth hormone. But they do it in the natural pattern of our body. So you'll normally take, like, you take an injection in the morning and an injection in the evening, for example. Now, I didn't touch on them because I wanted to talk about growth hormone. Some people use growth hormone, as in exogenous growth hormone, as a longevity drug. I don't know if you guys have seen that a little bit more recently. I don't know where I stand on that. And I'm probably going to go with not standing on the side of it. I think chronic use of growth hormone has its own negative side effects and can lead to insulin resistance, can lead to increased cancer proliferation in some cases with higher dosages. So I don't know how I feel about growth hormone as a longevity drug. I don't mind. I like the use of the peptides because they mimic our natural secretion of it. It's one of those things, like even I shouldn't reference my studies, but with mice who have low growth hormone, they tend to live longer. Doesn't mean they live happier, but they do tend to live longer without growth hormone. So I don't know where I stand on that as a factor, or if I think growth hormone is really a longevity drug. I would personally avoid it. Now, the testosterone thing is a little bit more confusing. For those with low testosterone, it definitely seems to have an overall benefit. Now, how high do we push testosterone before it becomes an issue? That's the really big question. So you see that people die. I think I had the percentage. I think I put the percentage in. I won't bring us back to the presentation, don't worry. No, I didn't. Damn. So we do tend to see early death in people with low testosterone. Now, the reason for that might be a few different fold because our environment can affect our testosterone. So people who are overweight tend to have lower testosterone. So is it the overweightness causing the low testosterone that's causing the issue, or is it the low testosterone causing the overweightness? I'd say it's probably being overweight first causing the issue with low testosterone. So it's hard to see through that if we think testosterone is going to be a longevity drug, but there's definitely place for its use in people who are significantly low with it. Now, I see it on the internet all the time. People are like, oh, what's your dose? Oh, enough so that I feel good. It's like, dude, I did 500 milligrams in my 20s. I felt great. But my liver did not do well with it. So chasing dosage just on how you feel is probably not an effective way to use any of these drugs. So with testosterone, it does seem to have benefits with longevity, but only if we are already low. So pushing it to those higher things, and then you're just chasing performance, which is fine. Like if you just want to put on 20 pounds of muscle, great, but it may not be great for us longevity wise. And optimizing testosterone doesn't actually add years to our lives. That's important to note as well. It just probably makes us feel good into the later years, but it doesn't seem to take away. That's enough for me talking. Do you guys have any questions on peptides? If there's any ones that you've heard of that you want more information on, I know there's fucking loads of them out there, so I may not have the answer for everything, but I'll do my best. Is there any of them that you've been interested in using?
I guess just question on, does injection site matter for peptides?
Not really, as long as it's subcutaneous. For most of them. Some of them are intramuscular, and I can't remember. There was one on there that's supposed to be done intramuscularly. I think it's thymosin, but most of them are just subcutaneous. So like you can get like the fat of your belly, you can get the fat in your quad, if you want to do them. So no, site doesn't seem to matter. With BPC, everyone thought like, oh, you got to get it as close to the injury site as possible. I don't like, I mean, just anecdotally, what people are saying, it doesn't seem to matter. Because people are even getting really good effects with BPC on injuries if they take it orally. So I would probably not think so. Some of them hurt though. Woo. MOTC is not pleasant. Anybody else got any questions?
Hey Greg, you mentioned to me before when we were talking about BPC 157, TB 500, mixing those together.
Yeah. They have synergistic effects is probably the best way to put it when you combine the two. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the difference in terms of the restorative effects, but in the research that I've seen on both of them combined, they do tend to work in combination really, really well. They both increase angiogenesis, but I can't remember exactly what the difference is off the top of my head. Anybody else got anything, gents? A new message. Good question. For peptides used in relative to natural function. So Jeff said, is there any evidence of negative feedback? So with the growth hormone secretagogues, right, the ones that tend to be used for fat loss, it seems to rebalance very quickly with growth hormone. That's the same even with exogenous growth hormone use. It's not like testosterone the same way where it can really shut down that, the brain testes axis. However, my worry would be with so like, like the GLP-1 agonists, and we don't know this yet, right? I tried to find any research, like when you're blasting all these GLP-1 receptors with GLP-1 all the time, do they desensitize? And we don't know yet because when you look at the research on people who take these GLP-1s for a long time, they lose a bunch of weight, and then if they come off, they all tend to put it back on. But that's the same in fat loss trials without the drug. So we don't really know yet with that. In terms of the other ones, I've never seen anything in terms of negative feedback, so I don't know. If someone is approaching surgery, is there any benefits to introducing peptides prior? So prior, I don't think so. Post-surgery peptides, so like TB500 or TB4 and BPC are really, really effective. I don't know how much you'd want to try and suppress inflammation post-surgery. So you could use a load of things to suppress inflammation, but inflammation is part of the healing process as well. So I would just look at using those two. You could possibly use something like GHK in that circumstance as well in terms of collagen. So yeah, like post-surgery, I've seen case studies that are fucking miraculous with those drugs. Like I know if I was going in for surgery, like torn muscle, whatever it was, I would try and figure out how much I could actually, this is not good advice, by the way, how much I could fit into my body post-surgery. That's not advice for all of you. Or post-op. Yeah, post-op good enough. Anybody else got any questions on peptides? Is anybody interested in trying any of them?
I guess I have a question as to whether it'd be worth trying or not. What was it? Thymosin alpha 1 for immune system. Only because I had Lyme disease or still have Lyme disease, but had that back in 2019. I think it was summer. And I used to have like the immune system of a water buffalo, would never get sick. Now I seem to get sick probably like every 2 months or sometimes every couple of weeks.
Now, I wouldn't have any advice to give you in terms of the Lyme disease because I don't know much in terms of that. But if it is a chronic bacterial or viral infection, like if you still have Lyme, I don't like if were you given a lot of antibiotics when you had the Lyme initially?
I think it was like 60 days of antibiotics, and it was just my doctor saying like, hey, this is something that could affect you for the rest of your life. You technically like never get rid of Lyme disease. And the one thing I've noticed is it's affected my immune system pretty good.
Yeah, it could have benefit. I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly in that circumstance, though, if I'm honest. Gents, anybody else? Doesn't necessarily to be have to be about peptides. We can discuss anything you guys want.
I have a question. This might be a dumb question, but where are you sourcing these? How do you get them?
So you can order them online, but they're for research purposes only. Now there is like so there's places that are third party tested. So like are you in the States?
Yeah.
So like Peptide Sciences is generally what we'll use. They are third party tested, so we know of the purity. And there's a few other good ones in the States where you can get them, but the problem is it's very much bandit country with peptides at the moment. So people know what people will pay for peptides. So I would always make sure it's third party tested wherever you order them through. So a lot of the time you'll get because it's for, like you said, it's not for human consumption is basically how they get around the law with them. They'll give you like the vial with the powder in it, and then you can buy like what's called bacteriostatic water, and then you have to mix them or reconstitute them and then take out and inject.
Okay. One other question. I guess the difference is there were a couple that you could take orally or injectable. So can you speak to the efficacy of one over the other?
So I suppose like GHK, for example, or BPC, which are good for like, skin health, wound healing, for example. This is all anecdotal, by the way, right? But I would imagine that if you have something like leaky gut, for example, then obviously orally will be more effective. Then maybe if it's something that's a little bit more systemic, then maybe injectable might be more effective. Although, from the people that I've spoken to who I respect around peptides, they don't seem to care anymore. So they're just like, look, I get the same effects both routes. So maybe it's just a systemic effect that it has. So if it was myself, I would probably, and I was injured, for example, I'd probably use both, just to cover both bases. Because like a lot of the time people don't want to inject every day, right? So I understand that side of things. But for the oral ones, if you're afraid of injection, I wouldn't think you'll get much less of a benefit from just doing them orally.
Thank you.
That's very anecdotal, so I apologize, but that's all we have at the moment.
Hey, Greg, let me know if you can hear me.
Yeah, go, Matt.
What are your thoughts on the potential possibility that peptides could fizzle out the way that like SARMs did? You think it's like possible or probable or not even remotely like related?
I don't know. So with SARMs, I don't know too much about SARMs. So I'll just be clear on that first. SARMs were generally used, am I right, for muscle growth?
Yeah, some were for like muscle growth, some were for fat loss. So not necessarily like within the realm of like healing and stuff, right?
I'd love to give you more advice actually, because I don't know too much about SARMs. Like I know SARMs were used as like similar to testosterone at one stage because they could give you the precursors to testosterone and they would turn to testosterone in your body. I know with those ones in particular, I can't speak for the rest of them, the side effects were just as bad as testosterone without actually all the added benefit of just taking testosterone. So I imagine, but you can still get SARMs online, so they haven't fizzled out. I think we're going to find in the next, well, it depends, obviously, the way everything's going in the States. I have no idea how they're going to regulate them, but I have a fear in the next 5 to 10 years, they're going to get heavily regulated. So we'll only be able to get them from doctors, quite possibly at one stage, which isn't always a bad thing, I understand, because, people use this stuff off label, not really knowing how to, especially with the GLP-1 agonist, man. Like taking those recklessly can be quite dangerous.
Yeah, maybe the phrasing fizzled out wasn't the most appropriate. It does feel like they've taken a backseat when compared to, the hot topic of peptides, though, for sure.
I think SARMs had a lot of side effects from what I can remember. Because well, this is going way back, man. Like, I remember one of the old gyms I used to work in, a few of the boys had used SARMs and they put on a lot of muscle using them. So they were effective, but I think especially when you're taking some of that stuff orally, can be quite hepatotoxic, so toxic to your liver. So maybe that's why they took a little bit of a back seat. Anybody else, gents? We good? All right, boys. Apologies for my lateness. I was genuinely just sat on a different room, wondering where you all were. Thank you, fellas. I'll see you all soon.